Blog Talk Radio.
Much Less Detail, the podcast, on a Thursday night, September the 25th, 2014. I'm Dre. My co-host Jay will join us momentarily. So once again, another busy day for me, getting ready for the show and not having as much time to concentrate on football as normal. I was getting the house cleaned out, getting ready to clean out my mother-in-law's house and bring some of that furniture back here to Memphis. So been a busy day. We had the U-Haul running and loading and unloading, and now I'm here. Well, I was talking with my partner, Jay, but he just dropped, so we'll wait for him to get back on. Interesting week four coming up in the NFL. There's already a lot of dog games out there. We got our highlight games. We got some compelling matchups that we found, but there's already a somewhat high number of games that are just like, no one is going to be watching and no one's going to care. It's not looking good for our pick tonight. The Thursday night game between the Giants and the Redskins, we both had Washington to knock off the Giants, but I guess it's not looking too good for us, is it? No, it's not, says Jay, I'm sure, if we were able to hear him, but it's strange. I got him up. I got him dialed up here, but cannot hear him at all.
That's what happens when I hold down the mute button.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, no, I'm still dealing with a bit of a cough here.
Ah.
So got the handy-dandy mute button here. So, yeah, we were definitely on the wrong side of a blowout this week, but we were on the right side of one last week.
Exactly. So I guess it all evens out in the end. What little bit that I got to sit down and watch, Kirk Cousins decided to start turning the ball over tonight. He had been taking such good care of the football, and now he's just decided to throw it up for grabs, and anybody who's on the Giants wants to take it, they can have it.
Well, it started off that the Giants DBs were making some nice plays, and this last pick that Cousins threw, he just threw it right to the guy.
Yeah.
He threw him a Larry Brown-style interception where I just don't think he saw the defender just standing right there waiting for the ball. Guy didn't have to make a move. It almost looked like Kirk Cousins was throwing it to the defender instead of the receiver. It was really bad. He's looking like a backup tonight.
I guess it's about time, right?
Yeah, he played a couple of games, played out of his mind, and not happening so much tonight, especially at home. To have the Giants, who I still don't think are a particularly good football team, come in there. And they're embarrassing these guys right now.
They are. That's how it works sometimes. The Giants' defense, I said before the season starts, I think they're better than most people think they are, and that might be the key to the whole team is, you know, as they go, so go the Giants, because you never know what you're getting from Eli Manning. You don't know what you're getting from the running game. I really think the defense holds the key for the Giants as far as the rest of the season goes.
Yeah, well, and you've got to figure with the strength, the way it's balanced around the NFC, that the odds of a wild card coming out of that division are probably pretty slim. So you probably are going to need to win that division to make the playoffs. I don't see two teams getting hot and coming out of that division. There's too much parity in that division.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, I'm a little distracted. I'm trying to type up the lines as we go. So I'm going to get this thing started so Jason can go on about the first game, and that'll give me time to type up the rest of the spreads here.
I'm going to be really quick with my pick then. just to put the pressure on you.
Just to mess me up even more. Oh, you know what? I got my picks ready, and not only do I got my picks ready, but, you know, if you listened to the show last year, you know that I like to go in a little heavy with my stats after 3 weeks of play. 3 weeks is not the greatest representation of statistics and showing what a team is and what it's not. For instance, the Giants. How the hell are you supposed to know what kind of team they are? Because based on the first 2 weeks, they were the worst. And now here, the last 2 weeks, including tonight, they've been pretty good. But it's a measuring stick. It's something. It's a way to grade teams that, you know, after one game, you certainly don't want to take that as any kind of measuring. Two games is still a little sketchy. Three games, okay, let's start looking at some of these numbers and seeing if we can make some sense out of what these teams are doing. So I got nice little numbers and nice little stats for each and every game, something, at least one stat in each game that informed my pick and who I have in these matchups. We only got 12 matchups. We're looking at we only have 11 matchups in the continent of North America and one matchup overseas, another London game. We're going to start our highlight games this week with the Packers and the Bears, the NFL's oldest and greatest rivalry. Got to go with Green Bay and Chicago. Don't know if we'll go with them when they rebound and the Bears have to go up to Green Bay. I know we want to try to avoid repeating matchups like that for our highlight games, but their first go-around this year at Soldier Field in the Windy City, we'll take a look at that. The 1-2 Packers, the 2-1 Bears, and how do the betting public see these two teams? Well, Green Bay and all their struggles and their 1-2 record are a 2-point favorite. Packers give 2 at Jay Cutler and the 2-1 Bears. Jason, who you got?
Yeah, this is going to be a strange statement on my part. I totally do not understand why the Packers are a 2-point favorite based on how they've played so far. But I'm still taking them.
Nah.
I'm still going to give the 2 points. I mean, even if it was Bears -3, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I was taking the Green Bay no matter what in this game. I think the Bears are way too banged up. They just keep losing players left and right. They can't stay healthy at all. And Green Bay really needs a win. They need a win bad. And they need to win something fierce here. So I'm looking for Green Bay to rebound here. Give the 2. Yeah, I mean, what are the odds that if they win by 1, oh, man, I'll feel really bad. But definitely feel comfortable giving the 2, taking Green Bay here. I hope I'm still on the line right now because everything went dead in my ears here.
It's called me using my mute button.
Oh, see, when you do that, you totally mess me up. Because it sounds like, you know, when we're talking normal on the show, I can hear, like, background noise coming from you
yeah.
a little bit. You hit that mute button, and I don't know, does it do the same thing to you when I hit mine? Because, wow, it makes these headphones feel like they're just, like, squeezing around my ear, and I feel like I'm talking in a vacuum. It feels like you're talking to somebody on the phone and somebody hung up on you, and you don't realize it. Especially
yeah,
now with cell phones where there's no dial tone anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you could be
blabbing away for 5 minutes and you have no idea if the person's hung up or not.
In the old days, you knew you got hung up on.
Yeah, people under 21 just looked at their parents and said, "What's a dial tone? What are they talking about?"
Yeah, what are they talking about? Yeah, no. When you would click the phone down, folks, and you would put the receiver down. Oh, Kirk Cousins just threw another pick, by the way.
Oh, for God's sake!
And it was right to the guy. I mean, this isn't great Giants defense. This is Kirk Cousins having a major implosion right now. It's not pretty. And when you would put the phone down, and it was a corded phone too. So these were phones that were corded. They had cords attached to the base where you would punch in the numbers, and when you would put that part that goes up to your ear down, it would make a clicking sound, and then you would, you know, hear, woo, you know, you actually hear a tone. So anybody younger than us may not remember that. We sound really old right now.
Really old.
Yes, but back in the days when we were, you know, in of pantaloons.
We're not that old, are we?
Well, no. I'm just, it's how I am talking this way. It's how old I feel. So yeah, I think the Bears are way too banged up on defense. I think Green Bay is going to be motivated to come into this game, and I think that'll be a tough game. I don't necessarily think this is going to be a cakewalk for Green Bay. They have not been playing characteristically tight football. They've been playing very sloppy, a lot of penalties, a lot of dumb mistakes. They just look badly coached right now. Don't want to have too many more of those, and you start to hear a little. Then you might just start to hear about Mike McCarthy being on the hot seat, because they've looked really unprepared to last every game. It's just dumb mistakes. Even the game they won against the Jets, they came out of the chute looking terrible. But I think they got enough offense to get it done this week. So I'm gonna give the two and take the Packers.
I concur. I believe they have enough. I also believe that coming into Soldier Field is always the elixir, is always the right formula to cure whatever's ailing Aaron Rodgers, because he sees those navy blue Bears uniforms and just gets like sexually excited. I think he can't wait to tee off and stick it to the Bears defense. That's just what he does. That's who he is. I really think he's going to come in and have his way with the Bears and do a number on them. Helped out by Eddie Lacy with the running game, who he really needs a confidence boost. He really needs a big game, maybe as bad as Aaron Rodgers does. And what Aaron Rodgers does to the Bears typically is what Eddie Lacy should do to the Bears in tandem, because it's the Bears' run defense, which brings up the first stat of the night, which is that much improved, highly paid for, high draft pick Chicago Bears defense, all the improvements and all the retooling and everything that needs to be done for that defense to put it back together, to make it back to the monsters of the Midway and what we're used to seeing from the Bears. And Mel Tucker gets to run his own defense. He doesn't have to run Lovie Smith's system, and everything's just going to work out just fine now. The Chicago Bears, after three games, are 26th in the NFL in rush defense. They are allowing 5 yards per carry again. It's the same old Bears. It's the same thing as last year. Guys are not in their run fits at all, just completely out of their zones, completely out of the way of the ball carrier as he whizzes right by them without a care in the world. One of the worst perpetrators of that is Shea McClellan. He's not even going to play because he's hurt now, so that's a good thing. But again, I go back to that Peanut Tillman injury a couple weeks ago. And now, instead of a three-headed dragon or monster or whatever at cornerback, where they get to rotate between him and Tim Jennings and the rookie Kyle Fuller as a nickelback, now it's just Jennings, Fuller, and replacement guy X in the backfield. And Aaron Rodgers is going to find replacement guy X and pick on him all day long. That's absolutely guaranteed to happen. Like I said, that's just exactly what the Packers need. There won't be any talk about the Packers offense and what ails them after this game, because they're going to get right back on the horse. They're going to score in the 30s again, and it's just going to be like old times, because unfortunately the Bears do not appear to have figured anything out as far as stopping the run, and that's really where everything starts. If you can't stop the run, then you're just opened up for the pass, because you have to play more guys in the box trying to stop the run. And that leaves guys like Chris Conte out there open to try to stop the over-the-top passes. That's going to get ugly quick. For the Bears, Brandon Marshall, he's got an ankle, he may not be able to make it. He's been playing through injuries, you know, the first 4 weeks of the season now, basically after week one, he's been playing hurt. We all have seen him limping around, hobbling around out there. He's been gutting through it, but he may not be able to make it to game time this time. And we know Alshon Jeffrey has been hobbling around as well, but he seems to be getting a little better at least. I was going to say one more stat, but I had my stats written separately from my main sheet. But that is the stat. That's the one stat that I wrote down. Chicago, 5.0 yards allowed per run. What else is there to say?
Well, and you know, in my for people who haven't, we haven't really told the story too much about how, you know, I know we alluded to it a little bit in the past, but whenever the Bears bring in replacement guy X to play in their secondary, I'm surprised you didn't use our normal term, ice cream truck driver. And that's a joke that goes back to, I believe, that Bears-Panthers playoff game. And the Bears, again, completely depleted secondary, brought in a guy basically either off the street, I mean, or off the practice squad, but it basically amounted to bringing a guy in off the street. And they decided to tell that guy, you know what, why don't you go out there and cover Steve Smith? And this is when Steve Smith was good, really good. And it gets to a critical point in the game, and would that have been Jake DeLome throwing the ball, or would that have been Kerry Collins?
So. I believe it was Jake DeLome.
Yeah, well, Kerry Collins, that's going way back. With the Panthers, anyways. But yeah, I believe it was Jake DeLome threw a ball to Steve Smith. It was a bomb, and the ball, you know, the camera pans down to Steve Smith, and Steve Smith is the only guy on the screen because the ice cream truck driver fell over. Or just blew the coverage so bad, and that was always started the joke for us with the Bears with the cover zero defense, you know. And every time it seems to be critical, it pops back up, and it seems to happen with the Bears more than any other team that we've ever seen. I mean, they did it with Reggie Wayne in the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
And most notoriously and famously, they did it with Randall Cobb here.
Just last year,
to lose the division on a fourth down at the end of the game, where only a touchdown can beat you, they just decide, just let that guy go.
Nah, we're not going to cover him.
We don't need to cover him. So, yeah, so it looks like the Bears are basically down to a couple of guys and an ice cream truck driver, and that does not bode well when that starts happening. We're going to see some busted coverages this week, don't you think?
Where does that ice cream truck driver specifically come from? Was the last job that guy had actually driving an ice cream truck, or was it something along those lines?
I think this is one of my I expanded on it a little bit. But it was one of those where the guy was doing something a few weeks before, some random job, and I think I just kind of ran with ice cream truck driver. He could have been toll booth operator or something like that, but for whatever reason, ice cream truck driver always stuck with us, and that's always been the joke, and it always seems to happen to the Bears. They just can't keep four or five DBs healthy at the same time.
It was something, some kind of driver. I think it was literally he was driving some sort of truck, and we turned it into ice cream truck driver because that's just the weakest sounding thing you could come up with. But it's so fitting for those Bears DBs that when they get whizzed by somebody just blowing past them as if they're not even there.
Yeah, don't bump them at the line. Don't challenge them in the secondary. Just let them go. Let them go. Let them go.
Don't touch him. Don't touch him. Cover zero. Don't go. Don't go. Don't go near him. No. That's pretty much what it sounds like. Our second highlight game of the week, we're going to go to one of those 2-1 matchups. There's only a couple on the schedule this week, but we're not going to go probably to the one that you think we're going to go to. We kind of talk about Carolina and Baltimore a little bit during the season already. I'm sure we'll get to them as the season goes on. They both probably will be in the playoff race all the way to the end of the year. The same cannot necessarily be said for the Buffalo Bills and the Houston Texans, who are both 2-1. One of those teams, unless there's a tie, is going to go to 3-1 after the first 4 weeks of the season. And you could have got pretty good odds on that in Vegas, I'm sure. So we're going to go a little bit in depth with the Bills and the Texans. Houston trying to rebound off of that terrible game against the Giants last week when I went all in on the Texans and came up completely craps. I mean, the little ESPN Survivor pool game, the knockout pool where you got to pick one team a week, that was my Survivor team. Whatever little ESPN prize I was competing for, like a $2,500 Best Buy gift card, I'm done. I'm out of that. That's just over already after week three. That's one of my earliest exits in many, many years. I'm quite ashamed of that. And then the Buffalo Bills also at 2-1 with EJ Manuel, you kind of never know what you're going to get from game to game with him. But coming off of getting spanked by the Chargers last weekend, so both teams were 2-0 and feeling good and riding high going into last week before crashing down to earth. And now they got to rebound. They got to figure out who they are, what they're doing, get back on track. It's going to be down in Texas. So Houston gets the home field advantage, and they get, predictably, the cop-out line of being a three-point favorite at home against the Buffalo Bills. And I am going to take the Buffalo Bills. I'm shocked that I'm taking the Bills. I didn't know going in that I was going to take them. This is not one of those games where I just looked at it and said, oh, I got this team or that team, no matter what. I actually had to sit down and kind of go over this a little bit and figure out how I think this game's going to go. So here's how I think it's going to go. I am surprised that Houston is giving up 5.2 yards per carry this year. I'm going back to the run games again. I think everything pretty much starts at the run games. And I think that Houston had a nice test to go against the Giants and Rashad Jennings last week. And, you know, let's see how good we really are. Let's see what we're doing, if what we're doing is working, and can we sustain it. And Rashad Jennings ran all over them. And so, no, obviously they couldn't sustain it. And now they get to rebound and take on another very good run team, the Buffalo Bills. They've always had a good run attack with this two-pronged attack that they have now with the older Fred Jackson and the young fireball C.J. Spiller. And they're 11th in the league in rushing this year. So that's what they base everything off of, is the run. That hasn't changed. And I think they're going to go in and give Houston another tough day at the office, running the football, setting up E.J. Manuel to make passes only when he has to, because that's obviously his most effective game, is making passes only in the rhythm of an offense, of an effective run game. When you have to rely on E.J. Manuel to go over the top and beat you with his arm, it doesn't go well for the Bills, and it also doesn't work because of the lack of weapons that the Bills normally have. Now, Sammy Watkins, the rookie, has come in, and at least he's providing one weapon, so there's one guy for E.J. Manuel to go to when he feels like he has to. On the other side of the ball for Houston, we have Arian Foster missing last week's game against the Giants, and who knows if that makes that big of a difference or not, but Houston certainly looked lost on offense with Alfred Blue, as their running back. So Foster may come back this week. He's on track to make it back for this game, but who knows how effective he's going to be. Houston has to figure out, was the Rashad Jennings game a fluke, or are they really that bad stopping the run? And I think this is a game that will show that they are this bad stopping the run, because Buffalo is the type of team to come in and put a beating on you running the football. Just the thunder and lightning combination, I think, is going to get it done for the Bills. My stat for the game is actually not that. It's that Buffalo has 8 sacks on the year already, and I think that's the other part of things, is if Houston has to rely on passing to try to get back into a game if they fall behind, giving up big runs, then it's up to Ryan Fitzpatrick to lead them back. And we saw what happened last week when it's up to Ryan Fitzpatrick to lead you back with his arm. Interceptions aplenty. He's almost an apprentice to interception Santa. He turns the ball over. We talked about this before the year began, actually. He can turn the ball over with the best of them when the pressure's on, when he thinks he has to make bigger plays than he's capable of making. And I think Buffalo and Mario Williams and company may be coming to get him if he has to make big plays. I don't like Houston's chances in that scenario.
Amazingly, I agree with 95% of everything that you said. And, of course, that would make you think I'm taking Houston. I mean, Buffalo. But, no, I'm taking Houston. First of all, this game is smelling a whole lot of pushy to me. I don't know why, but I could see this being an ugly game, like 16-13, just really ugly. I'm not seeing this being clean, crisp football. Yes, I think Houston is susceptible to giving up chunks on the ground, but if they can get E.J. Manuel into a few predictable passing situations, that's when their playmakers on Houston's defense can make some headway and really get in E.J. Manuel's head. I see them forcing him into a few mistakes, and he's been pretty clean so far. But yeah, these are two teams, boy, 2-1 teams, but they really showed their ass last week, both of them. I mean, both of them looked exposed last week. I mean, the Bills by the Chargers, I definitely did not expect the Chargers to go cross country and put together the kind of effort they did at Buffalo. And then Houston, making you lose your mind as bad as they looked against the Giants. So, you know, neither one of these teams is an overly impressive 2-1. And don't be shocked if this ends up being a push. But I do like what Houston can do as far as bringing some pressure on E.J. Manuel. Yeah, I think Buffalo could put a little pressure on Ryan Fitzpatrick as well. But I'm playing the odds here. First of all, totally predicting a push. But I'm playing the odds here that Houston at home can maybe make that one extra defensive play over the Bills. So I'll take Houston. You've got the Bills. I have this one. This one's going to be a 3-point Houston win, so none of this is going to matter. That's the way I think it's going to go.
Well, there you go. A long breakdown for a game that might wind up not mattering at all. So
it's smelling pushy.
There you have it.
That's why we love the cop-out line. I mean, the cop-out line is almost there for the bettors to lose their money on the push.
That is an interesting concept. You think they would try to avoid the cop-out line as much as possible, because that push just refunds everybody's money back and nobody comes out a winner. But if you put that hook on either one, the half either way, 2.5 or 3.5, that kind of tips your hand as to which way you're leaning as the casino. So I guess if you really don't know, if you really are having trouble figuring out which way you want to go, you just say, the hell with it. We'll lay it flat 3 and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, more often than not, it doesn't come down to that. You know, if that was the case, we'd have tons of pushes. And we've gone long, long stretches without any, and then sometimes we'll have those weeks where we have 3 of them all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's so unpredictable.
This may be one of the week, because that's certainly not the last 3-point line we have. Not
I would
by
gladly
a
take I would gladly take Houston winning 17-13, by the way.
I'm sure you would. I would gladly take them winning 16-14.
Oh, that's getting cute.
Yeah. But I actually got Buffalo winning straight up on that one, because I just got
okay.
The heebie-jeebies about Ryan Fitzpatrick leading a comeback again. No. Moving on to the late afternoon action and the Philadelphia Eagles visiting the San Francisco 49ers in the Charlie Garner Bowl, because every time I think of Eagles-Niners, I think of Charlie Garner going off and losing his mind for the Eagles out in San Francisco back in like circa 1995 or so. And they beat him, I think, like 40-8. I remember it was...
Wow.
One of the more shocking results that you could imagine, because this is back in the Steve Young, Jerry Rice heyday. And
that's
no
back
one
when
thought
phones had dial tones.
It is, speaking of such. And nobody thought the Eagles had a chance, but they went in and routed the 49ers and shocked the world. This would not be nearly as big of an upset this time. Philly is only a 5-point underdog at San Francisco, but that in itself is shocking. Because, as we know, Philly is 3-0, despite trailing by double digits in every single one of their games that they've played so far this year. And San Francisco is 1-2 and looking extremely unimpressive, and talks of Jim Harbaugh's job being on the line and all sorts of turmoil and drama with that organization. And yet, here they are, San Francisco, a 5-point favorite at home against the undefeated Eagles. Jason, what's your pick?
Yeah, I don't get this line at all, you know, and every once in a while, maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks, you know, we kind of find one, we fall into one where it's like, it's almost too obvious to take it, you know, it's not quite a trap, it almost feels like a gift. This one feels like a gift. I'm taking the Eagles to go in there and just outright win the game, so the 5 points at this point is just a bonus. I have seen absolutely nothing nothing from San Francisco other than basically, you know, catching Tony Romo coming off a back surgery, looking with no preseason action hardly at all, looking super rusty. Yeah, they looked great against that guy, and ever since then, they've done nothing special. The Eagles, yeah, it's great that they're 3-0. You know, we talked a little bit about the fact that maybe you should try to not have to come back from double-digit deficit in every game. So, I mean, their defense does something in the second half that it just can't do in the first half. It's also their offense turns it completely around. Their second-half offense this year has been stellar. And I think San Francisco is ripe for the picking here. There's nothing I have seen from them defensively or offense, especially offensively, that makes me think that they're going to be able to put up the amount of points that is going to be required to beat the Eagles. I think the Eagles just have way too much. I don't think they're going to come in there and be afraid. The Bears went in there and won. You know, so it's not like they have any, you know, mystical energy with this new stadium already. They got beat by a Bears team that was missing half of its defense. And it just keeps, you know, players just kept dropping like flies on that Bears team who still found a way to come back and won that game. I'm loving the Eagles. I'm almost a little worried how much I'm loving the Eagles in this one.
You know, Blue Jean Stadium's already been ripped. It's already been torn apart.
Wow, yeah, wow. I thought you were gonna give yourself a yeah for that one.
Oh, even I knew that wasn't worth it. That was just
okay.
Making an observation there. You maybe should be worried about feeling too good about the Eagles pick because I'm taking the 49ers and I'm giving the 5.
I feel
and,
good then.
Oh.
Now I feel a little bit better because you probably have a stat for it.
I went 11-4 last week. I'm not completely dead. I get it right sometimes.
Right, but last week you weren't stat happy. Anytime you go stat happy, I'm loving it.
That's a great point. I was rushed last week. I was even busier than I was this week, and
you
barely
had to stoop
put the picks
down to
together.
My level to put up those 11 wins.
And now that I had some time to think about it, now I'm trying to outthink myself. Well. It's up to you, dear listener, to decide if I'm completely full of shit or if I'm making sense with my reasoning. But here it goes. San Francisco, as bad as they have looked this year, I'm taking them to beat Philly and give 5. Couple of reasons behind it. I don't think I would pick San Francisco if I hadn't read that Vernon Davis should be able to come back from his ankle injury and give it a go. Because that offense, that San Francisco offense, looks so much different when Vernon Davis is out there running the seam. If he's not out there, he feels like, I'm sure there's stats for it or you know someone has figured it out. He feels like he's 1/5 or 1/4 of their passing game. It feels like Colin Kaepernick throws it to him 20% of the time. And all the other guys just get whatever they can get. But it feels like at least one out of every 5 or maybe one out of every 4 passes is intended for Vernon Davis. He's an extremely big part of that offense, and I think him coming back is huge. I really don't think I would make this pick if I didn't see that. Because with him, I got Colin Kaepernick throwing for about 240, 250 yards. If he was out of the game again, there's no way I could predict that. Because to who? To Michael Crabtree and Anquan Boldin and Stevie Johnson? No. But Vernon Davis really pulls that whole passing game together. Excuse me. Philadelphia, the way that offense runs, the way Chip Kelly has that team going, as fast on and off the field as they get, whether they're successful or not, they are absolutely in a hurry as if they have a cab parked outside the stadium. They are fast on and off no matter what. I think that is going to have a bad effect on the defense as the season goes on. The Philadelphia defense barely has time to make it off the field and take a sip of Gatorade before they look up, oh shit, we got to go back on the field again. Here we go. The stat to bear that out is that through 3 games, Philadelphia has defended as a team 125 passes already. There's only one team in the league that's defended more passes than them, and that's Denver, who's played an overtime game this year. Philadelphia's defense is on the field more often than any other defense in the league, I would have to think. And I think that was borne out last year, that they got tired at the end of the year, and they were able to beat up the Dallas Cowboys, you know, who weren't providing much resistance at all, to win the division title, and then come home and host the Saints, who just grounded and pounded them out and rubbed that defense all over the grass and wound up moving on in the playoffs. And I think we both think a similar thing is going to happen to Philadelphia this year eventually. But I'm going to go along the way during the journey and pick this as one of those games that they're going to wind up losing, because the defense is just going to have nothing left in the tank by the end of the game, and they're going to be fresh meat for Frank Gore and anybody else who wants to run for San Francisco to grind out a victory at the end and cover the 5-point spread. It's just a feeling I have. I don't have this as a very high, confidence game, but this is just my theory. I think this is one of those games that the Eagles' defense is just going to peter out at the end.
That's an interesting analogy, considering that, you know, most of the evidence that you're using, I would agree if this was game was being played, you know, in week 14 or week 15. But for now, I would think that the Eagles are fresh. And what's surprising to me is I'm not sure what information they're getting. And you may well end up being right. But boy, if the Niners win by 3 or 4, you can lay this one on the odds makers, because 5, for as unimpressive as they've been so far, seems steep. But hey, more power to them if the Niners can go out there and basically blow out. Because if they win by more than 5, I'd think that's a blow. Because I'd be amazed if they could win this game by more than 5.
And I'm probably being informed also by Kerry Williams complaining about the defense being tired. I think they're kind of looking for an excuse for when they do drop one of these games, because they're due to drop one of these games where they're losing by double digits. So I think they're kind of looking for a way out for when it does finally happen. So I think they're ready to drop one pretty soon. Our fourth highlight game of the week will go to Sunday Night Football, some primetime action, and get your clickers out. You should be able to keep up with the score of this one and keep those clickers going. The New Orleans Saints and the Dallas Cowboys in what promises to be a thrilling, high-flying matchup down in Big D, down at the big stadium. Jerry Jones's house will see the Saints and the Cowboys. The Saints at 1-2. Here's another 1-2 team getting more love because people think they should be better than they are. The Saints are actually a 3-point favorite going on the road at the 2-1 Dallas Cowboys. And I will agree with the oddsmakers on that one. I'm taking the Saints to go into Big D and do some spanking, do some Adrian Peterson-type spanking, and beat up the Dallas Cowboys. Jason talked about how unimpressive the Saints looked last week against the Minnesota Vikings, despite pulling out a 20-9 victory. And I guess what I would say to that is, think of how they're going to look when they actually do play an impressive game, because they looked so unimpressive and still won by 11. This is the Dallas Cowboys defense. Oh, my God. This is when it's time to look impressive. I think Drew Brees is going to have a huge day. I'm thinking 4 touchdown passes. I'm thinking just lighting up the Cowboys secondary. I know they benched Morris Claiborne because he had been such a disaster at cornerback and getting toasted every other throw. But here's the thing that people don't seem to understand. He was the starter. Obviously, he was as good as it gets for the Cowboys because he was starting already. Whoever you bring in behind him wasn't good enough to beat him out in training camp, so what makes you think there's going to be a better player now? I don't even know who his replacement is, and I don't care because I don't think it's going to matter. I think New Orleans is just going to romp all over the Cowboys. My stat for this game, Dallas, 21st in total defense this year. That's not dead last, so you might think, well, maybe not so bad. No. Look at who they've played so far. Colin Kaepernick and the unimpressive San Francisco offense. even though they had a decent game against Dallas. Jake Locker and the Tennessee Titans. Austin Davis and the St. Louis Rams. That's the three opponents for the Dallas Cowboys, and they're still 21st in total defense. Again, what the fuck is Drew Brees and the Saints going to do to this defense? I think it's going to be ugly, and I think it's going to be a rout.
Wow, I see this game being a lot closer. I'm actually going to take Dallas here.
Whoa.
Yeah, I've got the Cowboys to win. Something about, you know, the Cowboys really seem to love that primetime spotlight. We know they're going to get a lot of love from the announcers in this game. If those two guys, if Michaels and Collinsworth have anything to say about this game, the Cowboys should win 52-0. Because it's going to be a lot of Cowboys love. I know they're going to give a lot of Saints love too, but boy, this is going to be one of those that's going to be really hard to watch with the sound on. Anytime you get, you know, I think you call it star fucking. Well, there's going to be a lot of that in this game. But I just something just doesn't feel right to me about the Saints. Yeah, they held the Vikings to 9 points. That's great. I don't think that's any great shakes considering all the turmoil that team's been in. What really distressed me was that they were only able to put up 20 points against that Vikings team. So, yeah, maybe that offense is missing some timing, and sure, they're going to get fat against Dallas. But I think that the Saints' defense hasn't been overly impressive either. And, you know, people can make fun of Tony Romo, but he can get hot, and he can have those great games. And he definitely has the weapons. He has a running back. He has a stud wide receiver. And it's a good tight end. He's got enough, I think, to go toe-to-toe with the Saints in this game. I would not be shocked if this was 41-38. I don't see this being low scoring at all. And I'll go with the home. And I'll go with the home team. I will take the 2-1 home dog on Sunday night. And again, though, it's a 3-point line, so 41-38 for the Saints. It's another push.
Yeah. I'm fairly confident in this pick, but yes, that does scare me that the Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo has looked as decrepit as could be that first game of the season, and the last two has looked completely different. It's almost like he needed that game to sort of loosen up, and now he's right again. So I'll admit that does give me some pause that he does seem to be able to have the weapons to lead a comeback, and the New Orleans defense does look a little less than impressive so far this year. But I just think Drew Brees is ready to just light somebody up, and he didn't do it to the Vikings last week, but this isn't the Vikings defense. This is the Cowboys, which by your own admission is the worst in football.
Well, yeah, and he lit up the Falcons in week one, and they still lost the game.
And they found a way to lose, right?
They found a way to lose. So we'll see. I think that for a Sunday night game against two teams that just haven't been all that great, this will be a fun game, though. It should be a lot of fun.
I'm definitely looking forward to it.
If you like points, it's a good game.
We love the over.
The over-under on that game, I believe, 53.5. Yeah, over.
It's not enough.
It's not enough. That could be halftime. That could be covered by halftime.
27-26. That sounds about right. And now for the rest of week four in even more less detail with our limited schedule. We got six teams on bye. So going through our remaining eight games that we have, starting with the Colts and the Titans, Tennessee goes to Indianapolis, the AFC South battle. And they're both 1-2, so you'd think they'd be kind of even, but no, people know, the betting public knows that the Colts are much the better team. So Tennessee gets 7.5 at Indianapolis.
Yeah, you know, the hook sometimes would scare me, but not this time. I think the Colts getting to 1-2 isn't going to be satisfying enough for them. And I think they will go to 2-2 as impressively as they went to 1-2. And especially in a divisional matchup, I don't look for Tennessee to hang tight in this game at all. So I'm going to go Colts squish.
I got to break out my Stephen A. Smith voice for this one. Starting at quarterback for the Tennessee Titans, Charlie Whitehurst. What? Charlie Whitehurst. Yeah, I concur. The Colts squish. RotoWorld.com called him Check Down Charlie. If you don't know anything about Charlie Whitehurst, folks, that should tell you all you need to know. He's Check Down Charlie. You're not going to see any big bombs out of this guy, and the Colts absolutely should squash the Tennessee Titans. My stat for that one is Indy is averaging 4.5 yards per rush. That impressed me. I wasn't aware that Ahmad Bradshaw was doing that well, but he obviously is. I know Trenton Richardson isn't getting too much of that, so that's got to be mostly Ahmad Bradshaw's work. So that's actually quite impressive.
I'd be really curious to know in Vegas what the over-under was for how far into the season the Titans would go before Jake Locker didn't start a game.
But he still lost to RG3. RG3 got hurt before he did. That's an upset to me.
Well, it wasn't the injury pool. You know, it's not like the Deadpool. What is with these guys? So you just know. You just know they're going to get hurt.
Yeah, there should be an injury pool if there isn't.
And if you know the guy's going to get hurt, you can't do better than Charlie Whitehurst.
And why is your backup Charlie Whitehurst?
Wow. I mean, was Mark Brunell not available?
They
could bring him in off of the... Yeah, I mean, is he retired? Is he finally retired? Steve DePerg. There's a lot of these guys. A lot of these guys, I'm sure, looking for work.
Yeah. With signs on the side of the road. Vinny Testaverde is probably still looking for a job.
You know what? And with any of those guys that we just mentioned, they're all better than Charlie Whitehurst.
So we'll get to talk about the Panthers and the Ravens a lot as the year goes on. But for now, they're just a regular old game. Carolina and Baltimore, a battle of 2-1 teams. And Carolina, off that embarrassment Sunday night against Pittsburgh, Carolina is +3 and a hook at the Baltimore Ravens.
I will officially, for the first time this year, get cute.
Ah.
I'm going to take the Carolina Panthers to cover 3.5, but not necessarily to win the game. I'm not sure I can trust Baltimore as a 3.5-point favorite against anybody. They dominated Pittsburgh, but there's nothing about Baltimore that really just strikes me. And I think Carolina is still a quality opponent. I think that defense is going to be really upset at how bad they were made to look last week against Pittsburgh. So I'm looking for Carolina to come in a little fired up and keep this thing really, really close.
Yeah, I'm going to concur with you. I'm actually going to go so far as to say you can't trust Baltimore to cover that 3.5 because I'm not going to trust them to win the game. I'm going to take Carolina to actually go in and win straight up. That's a scary proposition because it appears D'Angelo Williams is their only healthy running back at the moment, and he's on the injury pool too. We know he gets hurt at pretty much every third game. So a hurt running core, a hobbling quarterback who looked really bad Sunday night, and yet how can you trust Baltimore? They're a very schizophrenic team, and I think Carolina, like you said, is going to be fired up to come in and exact some revenge for laying that turd that they laid on Sunday night. And my stat for that game is Baltimore has Cam Newton hobbling around. You'd think he'd have a nice big target and people could come in and lay him out and make Carolina one-dimensional. Well, Baltimore has achieved all of 2 sacks as a team this season. Baltimore's not coming in and pushing Cam Newton around because they just don't have the manpower to do it. So I think Cam Newton is going to rebound and beat Steve Smith in the Steve Smith Bowl and get the Panthers back on track.
Well, you can't count the Ravens sack totals in that first game because Andy Dalton just doesn't get sacked.
At all.
At ever.
0 Andy Dalton sacks this season. I still can't believe that stat. The Detroit Lions...
He won't get sacked this week either.
That's for sure. The Detroit Lions and the New York Jets. New York on a short week. Detroit coming off a impressive victory against the Packers. Detroit is the 2-1 team, and they are the 1.5-point favorite on the road at the 1-2 Jets.
Yeah, I've got the strong suspicion that all the bad luck that's gone against the Jets. This is the perfect team. If you're gonna turn your luck, your bad luck into good luck, do it against a team in Detroit that's just prone to making some silly mistakes. You know, and we keep waiting for the Lions to lion. I think the Lions do a little lioning this week. And I'm going to take the Jets to spring a little upset here at home.
You're referring to them as Schwartzing it up. You think they still got some Schwartz in them?
It's going to be gone by the end of the year. I do have the Lions to win the division. It's not going to be – it's going to take a while to get them out of the system. They just have that propensity to do something silly every once in a while. This year so far, though, they've been able to overcome it. Boy, the Jets, though, have just been so snake-bit with some silly plays, you know. So they had, like, timeout gate, you know, with the and just, oh, man. And then against the Bears, even though they look like they outplayed the Bears for that entire game, they still lost. If they've got anything, they need it this week. So I'm going to take the Jets to sneak one out.
And if you think Jason's being too hard on the Lions and saying they still got a little Schwartz in them, please name me the other team that has a linebacker get up from making a sack and do a dance so outrageous that he blows his fucking ACL out. Who else would do that? Only the Detroit Lions.
Raiders.
Maybe the Raiders.
The Greg Schiano Buccaneers?
No, they would hurt themselves trying to blow up the kneel down at the end of the game.
Yes.
They would injure themselves doing that. I'm going to agree with you. I got gangrene to pull off the upset on the Lions. Not necessarily because the Lions are going to lion, but because the Lions might not have Megatron. And no team losing a man like Calvin Johnson is in good position to do anything. He's got an ankle injury. From what I'm reading, it might be serious, folks. So keep an eye on that this weekend. They might be without their best player. I'm going to take the Jets to win even if Calvin Johnson goes to the post, because I just think the Jets have too much in the running game for the Detroit Lions. And my stat for that one is the Jets second in the league at rushing, 4.9 yards per carry between Geno Smith, the running quarterback, and also Chris Johnson and Chris Ivory, and 5.7 yards per pass. That's all they're giving up on defense. I think Detroit might have a little problem throwing the ball, but we'll see what happens. The Steelers and the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay, oh my goodness, those Buccaneers. They are 0-3. Pittsburgh coming back from looking bad in their second game of the season, looking great against Carolina last week. They're now 2-1. Tampa Bay on the road gets 7 and a hook at the Steelers.
It's not enough. I can't take Tampa Bay. No matter what. I mean, I'm sure if you have a stat for this game, is the stat just that it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I mean, could that be a stat?
The stat should also be, it's Mike Glennon.
Yeah.
Come on, Mike Glennon. Ugh. Break out my voice again for that one. I believe my stat concerns Mike Glennon because, as you well know, Jason, I despise Mike Glennon, and more than Mike Glennon, I despise the chatter around Mike Glennon by certain people who know football, who claim to know football, that tried to chat up Mike Glennon as a viable option this year to be a starter, as if Luke McClown or Josh McCrown coming in taking his job was some sort of crime against humanity, that Mike Glennon was so great. I went back and looked up the Mike Glennon stats from 2013. Here they are in all their glory. 13
Did your
starts.
Eyes bleed?
No, because I knew how bad he was, and I didn't understand why people thought he was good. 13 games started last year for Mike Glennon. 59.4% completion percentage. 19 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 6.3 yards per pass attempt, and an 83.9 passer rating. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Glennon and your
That's
Tampa Bay
horrible.
Buccaneers.
You know what that is? That's a backup quarterback right there.
It's certainly not this great guy that needs a shot, that needs an opportunity that everybody seems to be claiming he is. No, he's garbage, and he always will be garbage. I got the Steelers.
I'll tell you what, if Bear fans would love those stats. Boy, they'd have him starting over Cutler with those stats.
Yeah, but they'd have anyone starting over Cutler. It doesn't matter what the stats look like. Just That's anyone but Cutler. ABC. Miami is playing Oakland in London. Make whatever sense of that what you will. Oakland gets a home game ripped out of their cold, dead hands because they have to host the Dolphins in London. This is not a home game for anybody. Nobody's home is London, so put that out of your mind right now. But anyway, in London, the Miami Dolphins at 1-2 give 3 and a hook as the favorite against the 0-3 Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Raiders here. Just because. I mean, I really don't have a reason.
Oh, good. That's the best reason. And it makes me feel good because I have the Raiders as well.
Oh, good. But
of course, I have reasons. You know, it's more Lamar Miller running for Miami. It went well for him last week because he's playing a terrible team, but I don't think it's going to go so well this week. I just don't like the whole Ryan Tannehill drama that was created by the Miami head coach. I don't know what he was doing, but he kept not naming Tannehill the starter all week. Just kept refused to name him. The players themselves are saying, yeah, Tannehill's taking all the first team snaps. Of course he's still the starter. But apparently that's how bad he's played in the two games since beating the Patriots in week one. That there's almost been a controversy as if Matt Moore was going to get that starting job. And for Joe Philbin to do that to Ryan Tannehill, Tannehill isn't an all-pro, but that's just bullshit. You shouldn't do that to him. And I think this is just setting up for Oakland to knock them off because of the complete built-in, made-up drama inherent with that situation. And my stat for that game is Oakland has only allowed 2 sacks all year. Miami and Cameron Wake, when they get going, that defense can make some waves, but Oakland seems to be pass-protecting for their kid quarterback Derek Carr. He's not getting the David Carr treatment just yet, so I think he'll stay upright and put together a decent game and lead Oakland to a victory. Oh, those Jacksonville Jaguars, worst team in football, biggest spread of the week, no surprise. Jags are plus 13.5 at San Diego.
You know, you're expecting me to say it's not enough, but I won't. I'm going to take those points. I'm going to take the Jacksonville Jaguars and Blake Bortles in some garbage time because he is going to be the ultimate garbage time quarterback. Says, as I pointed out in the recap show, all Jags games are garbage time. So I'm looking for him to sneak under the line with a garbage time touchdown.
Backdoor cover. He's calling it right here. I will not go with you. It's not enough. San Diego by 20. It's Blake Bortles, his very first start. No Justin Blackmon, no Marquise Lee, no receiver you've ever heard of. And Jacksonville's already allowed 17 sacks on the season. It's not enough, and it's going to be ugly. The Atlanta Falcons, the schizophrenic Falcons, they're on the road as far as they're on the road, but at the Vikings, who have problems of their own. So Atlanta is the 3-point road favorite at Minnesota. Are you going through another coughing fit?
Oh, yeah. I've got the Falcons.
Oh. Okay. I've got the Vikings. I'm not completely sure why. This is Teddy Bridgewater's another rookie quarterback. I think he's, you know, everyone thought he was pretty good coming out of college. I think he's got the poise to pull off the upset against Atlanta, who hasn't been playing well on the road. And Minnesota was 3-1 as a home dog last year. That's my big stat for that one. I know it has nothing to do with this year. Monday Night Football sees the Patriots and the Chiefs. New England on the road gives 3.5 as the favorite at Kansas City.
Well, if it's an upset, then I'm going to call for the upset to be sprung here. I'm going to take the Chiefs to spring the upset at Arrowhead, huh? Yeah, give me the Chiefs on Monday Night Football. They showed a little fight last week, and that was enough to convince me that maybe they're not as awful as we thought they were after 2 weeks.
They did show a little fight. However, they don't seem to show a lot of protection. They've allowed 11 sacks on the season so far. New England's first in pass defense, and that's just not a good sign for Alex Smith. So I'm going to take New England to beat up the Chiefs in an ugly Monday night game. More on the other side of the music. We'll see you on the other side. And now into our VIP after show portion of the program, where I get to apologize for going on and on once again. I did not mean to push us right up against the limit like that once again, but it all worked out in the end.
It always comes down to the wire.
It does.
You know, we wouldn't have it any other way. We just can't have a show where we have a couple of minutes at the end to just kind of bullshit. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, exactly. No, I got a phobia. I have this fear of finishing up way too soon, and then we sit here going, So I do kind of go on and a little too much and filibuster, but, you know.
That's okay, because, you know, we're coming up on 70 shows now, and I don't think we've had a lot of dead air.
Not on purpose.
You can get over that fear. No, we've had some dead air, unintentional dead air. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. It's all right, though. If it's a phobia, I can respect that. It's
good.
A fear, and we can get you over it. We'll get you through this.
We all have our fears. I'm not going to do an after show on our fears, because I don't want to reveal that much about myself. But we all have
our fears. I don't want to hear about like spiders or something like that.
Oh, my God, you're doing the alien thing again. This is unbelievable.
You know,
right after the live show.
Absolutely nothing has changed. Have you gone back and listened to these shows? Does it come that
yeah.
way on the show over the
yes.
air, too?
Yes.
Wow.
And the times that you told me that I've been breaking up, you've gotten 60% of what I said. When I go back, that's what it sounds like, too. I'm completely making no sense, even though when I actually speak and everyone hears exactly what I'm saying, I still make no sense. But, yeah, it's still frustrating. The audio problems are still a problem. But your alien thing only lasts maybe a minute or so after we go off the live show, and then it goes away. So,
well, we had a very, very, very audio show tonight. I have to say that was probably the hour we had as far as audio quality.
Well, my wife didn't really have time to wind down and jump on YouTube and watch a bunch of videos. Because we were just finishing up dinner right when we got on the show to do the show live. So, but yeah, I got all my little stats in. I guess I missed one. That New England has allowed less than 5 yards per pass attempt, which is amazing. I didn't know their defense had been anywhere near that good this season, and now they're going against Alex Smith in Kansas City. I don't like Alex Smith's chances, but. But, yeah, I did get to pick in live. I do have New England, so that leaves us with, I mean, count up our differences here.
It's a lot for a pretty slim week.
One, two, no, it's not really. Not actually, it's not. Because we don't differ on those early games. We differ on one game, that Buffalo-Houston game. We were saying everything else. All the late games that we disagree on. So one, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's 6-1 in the early afternoons. All the other 5 are either late afternoon or the 2 primetime games.
Wow. Yeah, still, though, for, you know, that's half the games, roughly.
Yeah.
One game's already been played. Did not go well for us.
Yeah.
I believe it was, they say, I think I saw 45-14.
Holy shit. Explain the New York Giants to me, because I don't get it.
I'll tell you what. The Redskins were so sloppy with the football. And given the Giants the ball in their own territory, you're not going to turn the ball over 5 times and come away with many wins. I mean, when almost every drive that you seem to come out in the second half just ends in a pick, you're going to lose. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's the little bit of that game that I watched was the part where the Washington quarterback, Kirk Cousins, my mind went blank there, threw two straight interceptions in his own territory. And I'm like, okay, this comeback is not going to happen.
Yeah, because it actually looked like right before halftime, the Redskins went on a really nice drive, and then one of their tight ends just had the ball stripped out of them deep in Giants territory, and the Giants come back and get a field goal. Then the Redskins get the ball after halftime. I believe they got a quick touchdown, and then the pick train started, and it was just like, oh, this is not good. You see what happens with Kirk Cousins trying to do too much. Yeah, strip sack, fumble, and four picks. Yeah, you turn the ball over five times, things are not going to go well.
Yeah, that's a shame, because he looks pretty good when he's not trying to lead a comeback, when he's not being pressured too much. But obviously tonight was not his night. So what else do we have on our plate here?
Oh, it's just, I'll tell you, it's been a long week, especially a couple of these 10 o'clock shows, and I'm still not completely over this bug that I had last week. It's still kind of knocking me on my ass a little bit here, so I don't really have anything prepared for the after show tonight, but that's why we have an after show. So if we're going to have dead air, let's have it now.
Well, how long does it take you to get over things up there? What's the temperature up there? I don't imagine you could get over anything if it's always cold like that.
We're already like at peak leaf season right now. But it's been nice this week. It's been 70s this week, so it's been very summer like.
Oh, okay.
So it's we've had a really nice week of weather here, but everything I'm seeing shows next week we're going to be back in the 50s again.
Yeah,
we had those nights with the frost. It was like, are you kidding me? I mean, we had one day in July, late July, where I think the high was 59. It's been a really, really bizarre year of summer up here for weather, and also a lot of people, you know, usually like flu season's even accelerated. So what they normally expect up here for flu season to be like mid to late October has already started now, because we're basically in all this fall weather. It hit me pretty hard. You folks who are listening to this show have no idea how much they have missed out when I'm holding down this mute button.
You have been playing hurt.
Sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, and fever.
We're not getting paid for that advertisement, so don't go all the way down the list of that.
Do they still use that slogan?
They should. It's very effective. You actually remember that's Alka-Seltzer, right?
No, that's plop plop fizz fizz. Oh, what a relief it is!
Okay. So maybe it's not so effective.
I believe I was referencing NyQuil. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It was one of those.
So the next time I check the monetization page on our on Blog Talk Radio here for the 47 cents that we've made off of this show, don't think I didn't check. I'm waiting for my check in the mail, sir. I'm waiting for that quarter in an envelope. The stamp is going to cost more than the money you send me.
Yeah, exactly. They don't send us any money until it gets up to $20, I believe. So don't look for anything from me. I have no proceeds.
Fortunately, we'll at the pace we're going, we'll be in about our 45th year on air. By the time we eclipse $20 of revenue made for Blog Talk Radio.
And the other reason I bring up ads is because I know you don't go back and listen to our shows because you don't have the raging ego that I do. I have to listen to every show we do because I have to see how terrible I sounded. They actually are sticking ads at the beginning of our shows now. I believe I believe Sherman Williams had a 30-second spot at the beginning of one of our shows.
Well, at least it's not like Seattle's or something.
No, I'm sure that's coming soon. But
that would be if we were a golf podcast. Have you ever watched golf and noticed how every golf commercial is for boner medication?
Oh, geez, really?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, because, at the job I have a couple of guys, they always want me to put on, like, the PGA championships and all the Masters and all that stuff. And, yeah, if you watch any any significant amount of PGA golf, all their ads are focused towards boner medication. In fact, one of them even says, see our ad in Golf Digest.
Oh.
So they know their target audience are apparently middle-aged and older guys into golf who just can't get a boner anymore.
I can get us kicked off of Blog Talk Radio right now if I go down this road. If I open up the can of wondering if it's about middle-aged white guys with disposable income who have trouble maintaining erections, and whether it's black guys, they don't get the Cialis advertisements on NBA games because black guys don't have trouble keeping their thing up. We can go all night long. I could really riff on something like that and just make up shit out of my thin air and get us kicked off the radio altogether.
So are you saying there's no brothers using the Cialis? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying. I'm just saying. But I won't go down that road.
Yeah, no, I have a feeling because if you start us down that path, then there will probably be things said on both sides because then we'll just start joking. And when people don't realize that we start joking about race-related issues, it's wrong. It's usually very wrong.
Somebody
neither one of
gets,
us get offended.
Their feelings hurt. No, hell
yeah.
No.
Neither one of us get offended. But because we've been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah, when you come back on the other side with a joke about, you know, they're not about why they're advertising junior colleges and online schools during the day when black kids are home with their six babies on welfare, you know, when you go down that road,
yeah.
Then now we really start insulting people and everybody gets their feelings hurt and nobody's happy.
Oh, yeah, well, what do they advertise during the NBA if it's not Cialis?
Why are you asking me? Why you assume I watch the NBA?
Because you do.
Is it because I'm black? Yes, I do watch the NBA.
Yeah, that's why. Because I don't watch much NBA basketball.
Trying to think of what they usually advertise. You know what they advertise? Cadillacs.
What's that? Yeah.
The brothers are always looking for Cadillacs.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I'm driving the big black Lincoln Town Car around town now. And I gotta
I'm always getting
the brothers are always checking out my car.
Wait a minute. The brothers in your town? What's that? Four?
Yes.
all four of the brothers in your town.
There's more than that. It's like seven.
Well, are you counting the half brothers? Because I know the white ladies up in Wisconsin love the brothers, so there's a lot of half-breeds running around
It's funny because you'll get this joke, so I'm hopefully anybody listening to our show doesn't get offended. I came home from work.
I don't give a fuck.
I came home from work right before I left for my time off when the baby was born. And I come home and I sit down and my wife says, how was your day? I said, I saw the strangest thing at work today. It blew my mind. She's like, what did you see? I said, I saw a black
Wait,
guy.
Let me guess.
Ah. With a black woman.
That's what I was going to guess. I was going to guess you're going to be a black couple. I was going to say that.
Yes. I said that. She's like, oh, that's so... I was like, no. I mean, really, I mean it. Because usually, usually in town here, what you see are the black guys with the, like, 450-pound white women.
Man. Oh, we are truly going to get in trouble for this show.
But
I completely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not making things up.
No.
I'm not just pulling this out of my ass. That's what you normally see. That's the norm. I'm not saying that that's what you always see. I'm just saying that's what you normally see. So it was funny that I actually am at work. And I actually took the time to register in my brain that I actually saw a black couple, and it looked weird. it stuck out in my mind.
If it's something you don't see all the time, it's going to look weird, no matter whether it should look weird or not.
You know, but I'm from Chicago. That's not out of the ordinary in Chicago. You see it all the time. You know, you see people of every race mixed together. You see Asian and Mexican and black and white, and every, you know, and everybody's all commingled, and it's not just everybody stays with their race, you know. But you see it all. You see everything. It's a melting pot.
But how many years now have you lived in central/northern Wisconsin?
Oh, I moved out of Chicago at the end of 2002. So I've been out of Chicago for 12 years now.
So it's been central/northern Wisconsin for all those 14 years.
The vast majority of those 12 years have been a couple, 2 years I lived out in Montana. Six months I slept on your couch.
Yes. But yeah, I was going to take those 2 years in Montana out. It's been all northern Wisconsin, basically, that whole time.
Yes, so my life experience living in this part of the country is that you just don't see black couples.
That diversity is not high in your area, is what you're saying.
No, I mean, there's a lot of Asian here in central Wisconsin. There's definitely black, you know, but it's generally you see black guys and white women. I mean, I remember telling you when I moved up north, I'm like, dude, you want to move somewhere, move to Wisconsin. You know?
And this was many years before I would actually go on to date a woman from Wisconsin who wound up ruining my life, but that's another story.
Yeah, well, your life's not ruined. You're happily married now and living the dream.
Yes, ruined my life at the time, but I'm feeling much better now.
Oh, wait, I feel better.
Uh-huh.
I was worried we wouldn't have anything to talk about. See, so if we all, that's the trouble, is if we say we don't have anything to talk about, then we just start talking.
Danger.
That's the dangerous part, because then we get creative.
There's a big bright red light that should be in the corner of my room when I say that we have nothing to talk about. Like, danger, danger, you know, we're about to completely go off script here. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy up there. There's something about crossing that state line that it just turns into Yaha Central. Like, any black man that crosses the Illinois border and goes into Wisconsin, just his clothes all of a sudden pop off, and just women just come out of nowhere in all sorts of angles and all sorts of directions, and they can't wait to tackle them, and they can't get enough of them. I don't quite understand it. I certainly partook of it when I had an opportunity. But yeah, that's exactly how it is. And when I went up there to visit you, that's what I saw all around. I'm shopping in Kroger with your wife, because she picked me up from the airport, and then we went straight to the grocery store because she had food items to get, and you were still at work. And the looks that we got, I completely assume everybody up there thought we were a couple. Because it's a black guy walking around the grocery store with a white woman. I completely think that we were treated and looked at as a couple, because that's the norm up there, as opposed to if I were walking around with a black woman. If I'd have brought my actual wife up there, they probably would have thought that was my sister. So, that's just how that part of the country is.
We want to say that's the funny thing is you say that. Well, I'm gonna go. You want me to go off the reservation? I don't see a lot of black guys around here. I see tons of black kids. Tons of them.
Oh man, yeah.
I love it when you get the woman come in with the stroller, and then she's got like the four kids, and she's got the black kid, the white kid, the Asian kid. You know, and that's the main three mixes here, and there's more than you'd think that they've got just one of everything. It's like Pokemon or something. You gotta get them all. You know,
the United Colors of Benetton family, huh?
That's right. Yeah, everybody just keeps going around and mixing around, and eventually we'll all just be like tan. You know.
No, please don't go down that road, because that's what they're shooting us over, is they think we're taking over the world and eliminating their race, and so they have to eliminate us first. That's exactly what the George Zimmerman types are thinking.
Uh-oh. Is that why the Ebola? Is that why the Ebola is happening?
Well, you know, the government had, you know, made up the AIDS and trying to kill us off, and now we got solutions for that and medications, and now they got to make up something else, you know.
as
you
well.
Know how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, you always got to have something. Nobody gives a crap when all the black people in Africa get the Ebola. But if that Ebola hit, you know, like West Hampton or something like that, or you know, if all of a sudden you had like Ebola on Long Island, man,
Katie, bar the door.
That's right.
Literally. Oh man.
Okay, I think we've done enough damage for one night.
Yeah.
For folks who didn't listen to our show during the summertime, this is basically how the summertime show went, which is funny because more people listen to that than listen to this.
Yeah, if you're not listening to the football show normally because you think it's so dry and it's all football, hey, we break off into other things too. We talk about all sorts of stuff.
Send us some feedback because if we're whores. If we get more listeners because we're not talking about football, let us know.
Yeah, we'll stop talking about football altogether. Maybe we'll do a whole different show.
Yeah, this last thing that we just did, well, we could do this all night.
I'm so glad you brought up giving us feedback and letting us know if we should continue to be whores because that.
Oh, you're always the professional. You were just looking for a segue into the making it legal.
It's been another long day. I think I may have forgotten.
Yeah, it's okay.
But that does remind me to thank you for subscribing to our show. You're listening to us on iTunes, where you go to search for our show in much less detail, the podcast, or you're listening through the archives of our live page, which would be blogtalkradio.com/in-much-less-detail. That's where we are on the air live when we do finally do our show at whatever live time we decide to do it at, because as you well know, we could set a time and then 3 minutes before that time, we could set the time for another time an hour later, because life sometimes gets in the way like that. For that feedback, you would email us, and you would send that email to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com, or you could fire us a tweet. I am at IMLDDre, Jason's at IMLDJTG, or you can leave us a comment on our blog where our picks are going to be up later on this evening, this early morning, whatever time of day it may be where you are. And our blog website is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. It's been crazy. It's been hectic. Jason's been playing hurt for a week now, and I really appreciate it because it looked for a while like he was going to have to do this solo because I was going to be out of town, but we managed to work it out, and then it looked like I might have to do it solo because he was coughing up a lung, but we moved the show and was able to get that taken care of. So now we got our picks in and early once again for week four, and now we just got to hope that there's not too many crazy injuries to make us have to go back and change our picks, because actually the biggest contingency might be if Calvin Johnson can't go for Detroit. But the funny thing about that is we both already picked the Jets anyway, so it doesn't matter in that respect.
Yeah, I think we're okay. I mean, I'm interested to see. I don't feel supremely confident in my picks this week, so you could claw your way back into this thing. You're only four games out.
It's gonna be all about the late games. It looks like the late games and the primetime games. So,
and I mean, if you could go 5-1 and tie me, or you could sweep this week, you could have a lead, and that's something you've never had since we've been doing this show.
I'm not gonna get my hopes up.
I'm just trying to set you up for that, you know.
After
I go 5-1 against you this week, you know, and it just so you can get the beat down.
You don't want to get my hopes up for the big fail, because then I come on the air the next week playing CeeLo and in a terrible mood and ruining the whole fucking show. You don't want that.
No, it's all right.
All right, our next
show starts bad. We just assume it starts bad, and then we're just trying to find ways to make it worse.
Yes, we make it worse on purpose. Because we're definitely not radio professionals, that's for sure. So Tuesday night again for our recap show, week four recap, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Central is what we're aiming for once again. Hopefully life won't get in the way once again.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the 9 p.m. hour was nice there. I kind of got used to it.
Yeah.
So going back,
I can understand why you would.
Although Tuesday night doing that 10 o'clock show kind of knocked me on my ass because, you know, on Wednesdays I work a long shift, but I don't have to be at work tomorrow. I can sleep in. I have to work, but I don't have to be at work right away, so I can sleep in a little tomorrow. So the 10 o'clock tonight didn't really bother me so bad.
Well,
it doesn't
good.
Matter because my daughter will be up at 6 o'clock, and that wakes me up.
It hurt me because we are getting out of town very early tomorrow to head to Murfreesboro, so we're actually waking up at 5, so it's going to knock me back a bit. But what can you say? You got to do what
you
got to
do, right?
Hey,
take it for the team. You're taking one for the team.
That's right. All right, we are aiming, hopefully, to see you again Tuesday, 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern Time. He's Jay. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Enjoy your football this Sunday.